Welcome to Wyoming Stories. I'm Micah Schweitzer. This podcast brings you stories about Wyomingites in their own words. It's springtime, and as Alfred Lord Tennyson reminds us in his poem Locksley Hall, in the spring, a young man's fancy lightly turns to thoughts of love. So in that spirit, this month's podcast tells how four couples met. Wayne Thomas has their stories.
Ken and Dee Hoffman, living in Powell, Wyoming, were married in 1967. Even though it has been nearly 50 years, Ken and Dee still remember exactly where they met. My guess is you will too.
I remember when we were freshmen in dental school, and we were all sitting in alphabetical order. There was only one girl in the class out of 110, I believe. The whole scene was kind of an interesting thing. It was almost like we were elevated, but I'm sure we weren't. And there was a whole room full of metal tables with
black
nude
iron,
bodies.
Black iron tables.
Iron, and the bodies were kind of a off color because they'd been soaking in formaldehyde. That's where we were when I looked out and I saw the girl student walking from one part of the room over through the room and over into another room. I said to the guys that there were four of us, and I said, you know, they said 4 to 6, that girl looks like she doesn't have a group that she's working with. Would it be okay if I went and asked her if she wanted to work with us? And the other guy said, yeah, that would be okay.
I went up to that room, and I went into the room, and like you say, as here were all these bodies lying just stark naked. There was a piece of clear plastic maybe over them, but otherwise they were stark naked. And I kind of looked at them, and some of the guys were getting lightheaded, and they went over and sat down on the radiator, because you just kind of got lightheaded when you saw all this. And so I thought, well, I don't know what to do. I don't know any of these people well enough to, I didn't have any friends. And so I thought, I don't know, I'll go to the next room and maybe someone will talk to me. And there was one boy in our class who came over to me, and he started to say something. And I said, that's okay, you know, I'll be okay. And so he turned around and left and went and sat down somewhere else. So I went on to the third room, and same situation. And so I turned around, I thought, oh, what am I gonna do? I guess I'll just have to go back to the instructors, and they're just gonna have to assign me to a group. So I turned around to go back through that last room when somebody tapped me on the shoulder, and he said,
I didn't know her name, and I thought, I don't know how to address her. I said, hey, girly, would you like to work with us? And
boy, I didn't care who he was. Just anybody that would invite me to work with them was fine with me. And so I said, yeah.
I don't know if I even realized that she was in distress, but she was wandering around, and we could use another person in our group. And so she joined us.
It took a few years for that spark to ignite for Ken and Dee, but can you blame them after such a cold introduction? Something did start. It just took some time for them to realize it.
You had gotten some tickets somehow to My Fair Lady, and I love music. And it was downtown Minneapolis. I don't know if it was live or not. And he invited me to go. And I remember exactly where we were standing, and I thought about it a minute, and I said, no, I don't think so. And so he said, okay. And so I went up to my room, and I thought, why did I say that? That was really dumb, because I would like to go, and I enjoy spending time with him. And then I realized that anyone else that I had ever gone with on a date as such and became a dating issue, at some time we'd break up, and the relationship was never the same. And we had such a good relationship, and I enjoyed his company so much that I just didn't want to take that chance. And so it was safest to not go on a date.
But then we continued to get to know each other better and better. And somewhere in our junior year, she invited me to go with her to Iowa to spend Easter with her family. We went to Iowa, spent Easter together, and there was a flood that prevented us from coming back the normal route, and her sister loaned us her car. And so we came back, and for some reason there was no one else in the car except Dee and myself. And we had a long time waiting for traffic and taking detours and various things. And when we got back to the dorm, I was to return the car to her brother's house across the river. And I tried to drop her off, and she wouldn't get out of the car. She said she would go with me.
Well, I got out long enough to take my suitcase and stuff up, but I didn't think it was right for you to have to walk back alone. I was concerned about you,
yeah.
You know.
Well,
yeah.
So we went across the river and dropped off the car, and I don't know, pretty soon some things began to happen, and the chemistry began to work, and...
That was the beginning.
That was the beginning of the interaction that we began to have. We began to hold hands. We began to go on walks.
Oh.
Well, don't tell, I mean...
Tell everything.
Yeah. For making whoopee. A lot of shoes. A lot of rice. The groom is nervous. He answers twice. It's really killing that he's so willing to make whoopee.
Ed and Carmela Conning were married in 1975, both from Long Island, New York, but now they make their home in Cody, Wyoming. Today, they share their story on how they first met and their first date.
It was 1974. I was a recruiter for the Army for a couple of months. And that's how I actually met her, was through the process of the recruiting process at the time. They had a little deal, you'd see little postcards available, things like Reader's Digest. And they, if you had any interest in the military, they would, you'd fill one out, drop it in a box, and eventually it would end up in a recruiter's file. And what happened was her sister had asked for some information. So the name came up in the file, it was my job to call her. By that point, that sister had left house. There were four girls in the house. That sister had left home to go to college. She was back home on doing grad school. So I ended up talking to her instead of her sister. And again, that's, you know, trying to get her down to the office, trying to get her, because if you get them in the office, you can get them in the Army. And so I talked her into coming down to the office. I really felt like I was accomplishing something.
You
I didn't
did.
Realize, you know, not what I was trying to accomplish.
And anyway, like I said, the initial point for me was hearing his voice. I really liked the sound of his voice over the phone. I really shouldn't have even been home that day to even get that phone call, but I was. So I went down and talked to him for at least several hours more. I have to admit, I went down there that I wasn't really interested in joining the Army. I was much preferred to be a military civilian. But I was going to have a date with him by the time I was done talking with him, which I did manage to achieve after several hours of just talking to him. And once he figured out that I really wasn't going to enlist.
Yeah, and to make this clear, I really tried my absolute best to get her to enlist. That was my goal. You know, I took a liking to her in the meantime. She's pretty cute. And so after I'd finally been persuaded that she wasn't enlisting, I did ask her for a date. And that was, by the way, that was Friday the 13th. And for the record, I'm always lucky on Friday the 13th. And this is a case where I was again. I can't say the same for her, but it worked for me.
And I have to admit, driving back to my house, I did have a little fender bender, but my mother just said, well, you met him and your head was in the clouds and you didn't know anything after you've met him. So anyway, that was her explanation for the whole thing. And she was very annoyed that I ended up that I did meet somebody that after a very short, well, yes, because
later.
You were going to move me across the country.
That was later, that wasn't my first
date.
It took 4 weeks.
But, well, it took 4 weeks, but
it still ended up that, you know, she wanted me to hang around right, well, where we were living, Long Island. So, but it's always been entertaining being with him. He's never boring.
I hope not.
While she wanted nothing to do with the Army, she wanted everything to do with Ed. Here, Ed recalls their first date.
I had just bought a new truck, and it was a little unusual because this is Long Island, New York, and of course I had a four-wheel drive pickup. And I'd been in a minor fender bender a couple days before, so to even get her in the truck, and I mean, I've always done things, you know, walked her out from her house, opened the door. Well, the door didn't open really well because the fender was binding it. So as I pulled the handle, I kicked the fender so the door would clear. And she just kind of looked at that and smiled and said, cool, and got in the truck. So right off the bat, I mean, with this redneck truck in a non-redneck area, she was cool with that, which was a lot of points in her favor. She had a nice short skirt on, so she had a difficult time getting in the truck, which didn't bother me any.
It was mini skirts, but I was ladylike.
Oh, no, you did great. Well, anyway, the other problem in the truck we discovered later was, I said, I just bought it a couple of weeks before. The first time for the date, I filled the tank all the way. I wasn't into this running out of gas excuse. What I didn't realize is the previous owner had punctured the tank about a quarter way from the top. Had some tool in the back. And instead of fixing it, he body puttied it and painted it over. So didn't appear to be anything wrong. So we went in, watched the folk dance, had a great time. Come back out of the truck, it's out in the parking lot, and I opened the door, and not only can you smell the fumes, but the carpet is completely saturated in gasoline, because the body putty plug would have worked if it wasn't gasoline soluble. So I dropped most of a quarter tank of gas into the cab. So I needed to drive off, so I asked her to stand back a couple of cars, because I figured if it was going to explode, it would do it when I hit the ignition. Obviously, I'm still here. It didn't explode. So, didn't explode. She got in the truck and rode home with me. Nobody in their right mind would have done that, which gave her a lot more points.
And actually, he did make a rather interesting first impression, because I moved back home to work on my master's, so I was living at home. And I'm the oldest of seven children. When he came to pick me up, they're all, you know, typical kids. They're kind of hiding behind curtains and doorways and everything else and peering out the window to see who is going to turn up to take me out on this date. And I don't know why, but he also jumped over the fence. I don't know why he didn't use the gate. But anyway, so
this, well, he jumped over.
Still, normal person would have opened the gate and gone through it, but he didn't do that. So anyway, he definitely made an impression on the sisters and brothers who were spying behind the curtains.
They weren't all spying. Your brother Angelo was sitting on the couch reading a newspaper. It would have been really convincing had the newspaper been right side up.
This is Wayne Thomas. Anthony Pulver and Helena DeFina recently celebrated 20 years of marriage. Their marriage is one that could fill the pages of most people's romantic fairy tales. You know that couple that just should have been together forever? Here's their story.
I was looking for a place living in Flagstaff, and I answered this ad, and the woman who rented the rooms where I eventually found a place had a little sewing shop downstairs, and I went in to meet her. And I remember how chaotic it was. And first her 11-year-old son came charging through, and she stopped paying attention to me and yelled at him and came back to me and was telling me about the room. And then all of a sudden, the door opened and in came Helena, who was going to be one of the people who was renting upstairs already. And she introduced us, and I remember she just seemed like a pleasant person. I thought, well, this will be nice. That was, you know, the first time I saw her. And then the first time I had a conversation with her was when I moved upstairs and I walked into the kitchen, and I remember she was eating canned peas out of a pot that she had heated up. And I thought, wow, this woman needs some help. And so luckily my cooking skills came to the rescue up there. That was kind of fun. Then one night we went out to dinner, and it seemed like a date, and it was a really disastrous date because, as she told it, I was moaning about my former girlfriend that I left in New York, and she was with this wet, sappy Italian guy who wasn't paying any attention to her. And before he knew it, we went out, we had a pretty lousy dinner, and then we went out for a few drinks afterwards, and because I was not where she wanted me to be, she decided she was going to just go out there and start dancing, and my wife loved to dance. So she met some other people, and they got her doing some shots, and before you knew it, I had this very drunk woman on my hands who I took back to our little place where we were renting, and held her head while she got rid of all of that alcohol. And apparently from then on, it was true love.
On a Sunday afternoon in January this year, after they had returned from a winter vacation, Anthony went to awaken her from a nap like he had done before. Only this time, she didn't wake up. She was gone.
I haven't lost just a lover. I lost a friend, someone I had plans to do things later in life, you know. Of course, the whole situation came as such a shock, and because of how healthy she was, and these are things you just don't know. You live your life each day, and you listen to every cliche of, you know, seize the day, carpe diem, all of these things, but it's been a heck of a lesson. We did that, so I don't really have those kind of regrets. There's certainly a lot more I wanted to do, certainly a lot more plans that we had, but I don't have any regrets that I didn't say or do these things, because we did do them. And we did a lot of wonderful things and had a lot of great times. And we really, really shared a sense of humor. As a matter of fact, on the flight home, 3 days before she died, we were coming home from Cancun, and I don't remember exactly what it was, but we ended up having some belly laugh on the plane. I think somebody had opened up some food that just made the whole plane smell. And it was so annoying, it had gotten to the point where we both got giggles. And I mean, we both were literally gasping for breath. And those are the kind of laughters that, you know, that you don't always see with husbands and wives, you know. And we had such a similar sense of humor in that way. And it just hit us in that way. And those are the things that I'm going to miss a lot, you know. And her simplicity, you know, that she could take, when we pulled into the driveway, we had had a number of days of rain down there, you know, with this, our sunny Cancun vacation turned into a pretty rainy week. And as I pulled into the driveway after coming home from the airport, I joked with her. I said, well, it looks like I'm not planning any more of these Caribbean vacations. I'll let you handle them next time. And she just looked at me and she said, you know what? You did it for me. You did it because I want, you know how much I don't like the cold. And that's all that matters. And even though it was rainy, it was 70 degrees, and we walked, and we talked, and we made plans, and you did it for me, so don't worry about it. And she always had that ability to make you feel okay about it, so.
Good night, angel. I just one more kiss to end this perfect day. Before you spread your wings and fly away. Good night.
Craig was a faculty member at Northwest College and Lisa, a student. This year, the Satterleys of Powell, Wyoming, are celebrating 34 years of marriage. Here is their story.
It used to be when I was a student at Northwest, they didn't have the computer, so we would all go into the gym, fill out our forms, and then we'd have to go to the desk sitting around the table, around the edge, and get the instructors to sign off on our classes. So I'd come back from my sophomore year, and I went over to have Scott Horton sign my form, and he introduced me to Craig. I didn't think too much of it. I thought he was kind of cute. And I went back. My roommate was an RA, and she had already met him. And she'd been telling me how cute he was. But my roommate was actually taller than Craig, so she thought he was a little short. She thought I might really like him. So, yep, that was pretty good. And then the first time I was pretty sure that I had a major crush on him, he was showing he'd taken some pictures. I think it was at the Bozeman with Vicky and Chris. Mm-hmm. And the three of them had taken these shots. You know, he's wearing a jean jacket and he's got this mustache like this and sunglasses on, you know, and the girls are draped all over him. And they had some of him with the...
They were making me do all this stuff.
Yeah.
Just like,
but that was when I thought, wow, well, this is really cool. And so, like, that weekend, I dumped the guy I was dating.
Yeah, that's pretty much. I kind of remember it that way, I guess.
Yep.
I think the thing I wanted to say was right after I got hired and I'm in President Orndorff's office, he says, by the way, young man, I see that you do know we have a lot of young women on this campus. And I thought, well, this is kind of a strange thing to say. I said, well, yeah, I guess so. I'd only been there a few days, you know. And he says, well, whatever you do, if you decide to date anybody, please be discreet. So when I got out, I thought the last thing in the world I wanted to do was date anybody here. And that's why when we met, that really wasn't on my mind, I don't think, until we did that outdoor class.
The college photography department takes students every fall into Yellowstone National Park. And if you've been to Yellowstone, you know it's a magical place.
We dated for most of the year,
yep.
On and off. And then in the summer after she graduated, she had gotten a little old-time photography studio going over in Cody. And so I kind of saw her off and on over there because I worked over there when I wasn't working here in the summer. And because I'd asked her to marry me. And after she turned me down, I was kind of stunned. I didn't know quite what to do. I thought, well, wow, I thought things were going really well, you know. And so I didn't know quite what to do. And then it was about a week or so later, she kept hinting to me that I should ask her this again. I'm going, why would I do that? You already said no. But I said, well, you know the question. If you want to get married, I still want to do that. And she said, oh, yeah, yeah.
Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you. And I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be.
That's it for this edition of Wyoming Stories. Wayne Thomas produced and narrated our podcast. The stories were recorded with help from Troy Hunt, Jocelyn Haruska, Jane Johnson, Robert Rumboltz, and Rand Flory. We'll release a new podcast the first Monday of each month, and you can listen to more Wyoming Stories online at wyomingpublicmedia.org. Anna Rader is our web editor. I'm Micah Schweitzer. Wyoming Stories is a production of Wyoming Public Media.